This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It's Christmas!
Hello and welcome to episode 296 of the Stacey West podcast. It's not Christmas. I clicked on the wrong sound effect. My name's Gary, I'm your regular host. What's irregular about this show is that for the first time ever, we are going to broadcast live on YouTube at the same time. It's a bit of an experiment, but quite a few people have been watching on YouTube, so we figure we can broadcast it live. But rest assured, if you listen to audio-only content, we will be continuing to put it out on podcast in the usual format. Those who are watching on YouTube will get a glimpse behind the scenes, because if we screw up and have to edit anything out, we shall be not editing it out on YouTube. So you will be getting the raw, unedited edition. So welcome to you if you are watching on YouTube. Welcome also to my co-host for today, Mr. Charlie Beeston. How are you doing, my friend?
I am, yeah, quite well, actually. It's been a really, really good weekend. It had the opportunity to be ruined by 90 minutes of football, but it wasn't. It was a really good weekend regardless. And today's felt like quite a long day.
You're tired?
I'm very.
Yeah.
Very tired.
I'm absolutely knackered. So, yeah, so to add a little bit of context, that I'm sure that there are plenty of you who are listening to this at home who were in the same situation. We, Charlie and I, not together, but separately on Saturday, decided to be out and about in town drinking and masking what was, and we'll come on to it, obviously, but what was a kind of a bittersweet day, I think, or a bittersweet morning. So I ended up leaving the Ivy Club in Rugby about 1 o'clock in the morning, I think. And that was after an interesting session in town. I can't handle that because I'm only 45. So the next day I was running on empty. I was fast asleep. I got home, I think, about 11 o'clock in the morning. And then I went back to bed. And then I got up at 3. And then I went back to bed at 4. And then I had to pick Chris up at 5 for the awards ceremony last night, which we went to. And I was yawning all my way through it. But Billy the Beast Beeston wasn't showing any yawns. And both nights went into the early hours, I think.
Yeah, I did. Saturday was a brilliant, brilliant night. Ended up leaving Craft in fact, it was probably quite early. It was about 2 o'clock, just before. Ended up getting home. And then Sunday, as you say, we did it all over again. The awards show was a brilliant evening. And then it was straight out after that to anywhere that was still open, which ended up being Scene, because it's the only place that's open after hours.
Isn't that the old Christopher's Bar on Newland?
Yeah, the gay bar.
Is that where you were, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like to say gay bar, because I don't want people to think that we're homophobic in any way. I've had some good nights in there.
Leave it. I've got to say, I think it's a brilliant place.
Well, back when it was Christopher's, so I'm going back a little bit, back when you were probably in nappies, my girlfriend at the time, her mum used to work there. So we used to get it quite cheap. So we had a couple of birthday parties in there, and it never really, I'd never used to kind of assimilate that it was a specialist interest bar. And I'd say things like, "Oh, we're going to Christopher's," and people would be like, "Are you sure?" I'd be like, "Well, why not?" It's always, yeah, it's always been a really good vibe. I think so. Yeah, it was good. And when you say we, because when I say we, I mean me, my mate Matt, my mate Dave, I mean Dad was with me. We tends to be that, but your we is a little bit different, isn't it?
No. So Saturday was me and my dad. My dad came out as well on Saturday, which just that for me topped off what was already a great night, kind of going out and drinking with my dad as well. Because he never really does that in town. We've never gone out in town together. We've done probably like one proper night out, and that was in Spain last year. But luckily my mum let him out on Saturday, so he came out as well. And there was a few other people out in Craft as well. And then, yeah, Sunday night was just the same group. I'm not saying it because I'm not going to get slaughtered for it. I'm surprised you haven't saved the little video that Ben got.
Wow. No, I shouldn't pull a face. I forgot people can see us. Yeah, so it was good. And look, we can come on to the kind of positive stuff and all of that. And I'll apologize to anybody, by the way, if I lack energy today, but I've even just been for a nap now. I finished work at 4:30 and I went for a quick nap. I'm exhausted. And I woke up to the dog licking my face. He was most concerned, so he came charged up the stairs, licked my face to tell me it was time for his dinner. So I'm just kind of shaking that off. But we are here for one reason and one reason only, and that is to talk about Lincoln City Football Club. And whilst we can talk about awards nights and we can talk about songs and we can talk about who Billy's best friends are in football and all that sort of stuff, we have to talk about a game first and foremost. And I think it seems an awfully long while ago now that we went to Tinsel Bank, and it's only Saturday. It was only kind of just 12:30 with hopes of the playoffs. And I think there's been an awful lot of positivity since the game. And there's an awful lot of kind of acceptance that, you know, we didn't make it. It was just a step too far. There's, you know, there's noise next. There's a lot of positivity. This isn't going to be a negative podcast, but I think we've got to look at the game as a standalone fixture, because we do the other 45 games. So it's only fair that we talk about this one in the same manner as we always have. And ultimately, it was a disappointing day for Lincoln City.
Which, it was.
Let's be honest, was one kick away from being a joyous day. And that's what it comes down to. But let's start at the top, Charlie. There was a surprise inclusion on the team sheet.
Yeah, there was. Having Tyler Walker back for the last game of the season, which obviously we hoped it wasn't going to be the last game of the season, but obviously it ended up being a huge inclusion. That really positive for him to be back in and around sort of the first he's got. He's been on the grass for a few weeks. Marcus Kubala said after the game he hadn't even played a friendly. He was properly chucked into the deep end on Saturday, but I don't really think he will have minded as a player, because every player wanted to be a part of what was happening on Saturday. Maybe not after the fact, but definitely before the fact. So yeah, it was really good to see him coming back. Obviously, it had been teased a little bit on Thursday that there was somebody, and he was the obvious sort of outside choice.
Yeah, he was. What I find interesting is, you know, we knew that we were going to have to attack possibly later in the game. So I didn't find it surprising that he got a run out, or surprising that he was included, because with the greatest respect to the young lad, I think Okoro, who's been on the bench the last couple of games, he's on the bench without any real solid chance of getting on. I don't mean that harshly, because young players come through at a certain rate, but he's probably on the bench thinking, I'm here as part of the matchday squad to integrate for the future. Tyler Walker, when he signed in the summer, was the marquee signing. And I think for him to be able to come in for the last game and have a decent chance, by the way, which, you know, because I thought that the scene was set. I thought, Tyler Walker coming on against his old club. It was 0-0. He's coming on. I was nudging my mate Matt. Here we go. So it was pretty big. But that didn't impact the first half, did it? So how did you, I pardon the pun, but how did you see the first half?
Through just a load of blurs. It was a game where, to be fair, I felt that we struggled a little bit to really create too much, get a proper sort of foothold in the, into the match. But then I also felt that we frustrated Portsmouth in the same sense. They couldn't really get too many opportunities in that first half. They couldn't really get enough time on the ball to create opportunities themselves. Same as what we couldn't. There wasn't really much space in behind for quick counter-attacks at either end. It was a bit of a drab first half in that sense, which, you know, there was an opportunity for that to suit us if we were maybe going into the game needing a draw, that sort of thing. Brilliant. That's exactly what we'd have wanted. But obviously that isn't how the other results were beginning to pan out. I think it was only within like the first 15 minutes that for those that were looking down and checking their phone throughout the game, all of our other sort of rivals to get into fifth and sixth were all 1-0 up quite early on. So we sort of had to immediately turn around and sort of show something very similar. And we just didn't, not in the first half. But as I said, I wasn't really that surprised, and I still thought our time was going to come in the game to show more, especially when we knew we were going to end up throwing the kitchen sink at it if needed.
Yeah, I agree. I felt it was a bit tense, to be honest, in the first half. And like the pre-game, it's not ceremony, is it? But the pre-game kind of guard of honour for them, and then the laying of the wreath at the Stacey West End and all of that sort of thing was impeccably observed. And you know, then the whistle goes and it's this great, you know, it's this great occasion, and you think, right, when we get into it. And then it just didn't happen because Portsmouth are the champions of League One. And they're the champions of League One for a reason. And we'll talk about some of the darker reasons perhaps a little bit later on. But for the positive reasons, it's because they're incredibly good at football. And when you put the football at the feet of a Portsmouth player, they're likely to retain that football for quite a while. 73% possession in the first half, 302 passes attempted compared to our 101, 264 successful compared to our 73, almost four times as many successful passes as we made, you know, give or take kind of 20 passes. They utterly dominated the first half in terms of possession, yet we had six shots on target. So what we'd done in this game, it was a different approach, I think, to previous matches where, you know, we've looked to have the ball, we've looked to get at teams really early. We know Michael Scabala's no fool. You know, we know that. So he's looked at this, I think, and we've got to go relatively direct. We've got Fred up there who we can aim for. We've got to try and get at them in that respect, hence our fewer passes. XG, neither team really deserved a goal in the first half. 0.3 for them, 0.99. There was one chance, I think, on half an hour for them, which was kind of a big, big chance. But other than that, there wasn't an awful lot for anybody to get excited about.
No, there wasn't. And that was sort of the problem, if you like, from our point of view, considering what we needed in that first half. But that's the thing, they are an unbelievably strong side. And they're, like I say, there's a reason why they are top of the league and champions a few games ago as well. Let's not pretend like they were still fighting for something on the last day. I know we'll get onto that. But it's the fact that they are the best side in the league by a bit of a good distance as well. I mean, it was 5 points in the end to Derby. But that you'd also like to think that they'd have probably beaten Wigan or got something more out of the Wigan game last week if it wasn't for the fact that they'd won the league on the Tuesday night and the players were celebrating. I mean, when I spoke with Hugh from the PO Forecast last week regarding this game and sort of from a Portsmouth perspective, he was saying John Messina is a sort of manager that he's not going to let the players just simply skate through this match. He's going to want to continue to see something. Now, when their lineup came out and we saw a slightly different lineup for some of their players, maybe a couple of more squad rotation players were starting for them rather than their sort of some of their normal key starters, that worried me a little bit because they're the sorts of players that are going to need to have shown something. I felt in the first half they did have those opportunities, but there just wasn't enough of them from their point of view. We had a few ourselves again, but they just weren't the right opportunities and it was full of nerves.
Yeah, it was. Nervy, edgy, great atmosphere, but not a game where I thought that there was going to be a huge amount in it, if I'm honest. And that's actually credit to us as well, because like we say, we keep saying it's a great Portsmouth side. It is a good Portsmouth side. You don't win the league for no reason. It was also a Portsmouth side with a certain amount of passion to not lose the game or not do badly in the game, because John Messina was Oxford captain for so long. He will have wanted to help out his former side. It's not like they could meet them in the playoffs and there was anything tactical going on there. So you know, you've got to there'll be a lot of people will disagree with this, but you've got to respect Portsmouth for coming here and treating it like any other game, rather than a Peterborough throwing a game essentially against Cheltenham when other teams' livelihoods were at stake. And yeah, I kind of get it. Peterborough did have, they've got a little bit of something more to play for, but yeah, I'm not convinced that what they did was particularly the right thing. But this isn't a Peterborough podcast, this is a Lincoln podcast. So yeah, I felt that it was a little bit like the Derby and Peterborough games at Cinsale Bank. They were both 0-0. I think had it been game 30, we would have been happy to have played out a 0-0 with very few chances. Had it been game 30, we'd probably have approached it in the same way that we did through to the 60th minute. And I think that's where everything changed. But that period after half time, I think up to probably 60th minute is how we would have gone about it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we'd have quite happily taken that point against, as we've said, the best side in the league statistically this season. We'd have loved to have taken a point. I mean, what Portsmouth do so well and what they've done so well all season is made themselves hard to beat. They've lost five matches all year. And again, one of those, as I said, was against Wigan, where it was straight after they'd been crowned as champions. That's five matches in a 46-game season they've lost. That's what set them apart this season. And it showed again on Saturday from their point of view. And therefore, from our point of view, like you say, we'd have snapped your hand off if we were offered that as a draw back in January, for example, when we were playing Derby and Peterborough. If we had Derby, Peterborough, Portsmouth three games in a row, we'd be begging for 3 points. I think that's just what...
Begging strong. I mean, would you take it?
At the time, we'd have begged for it, considering the fact we hadn't won a game since... end of November.
Yeah, Cambridge 1-3-0.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Isn't it weird, just as an aside, sat talking about this game now when like the past 48 hours have really been the end of the season, and all of a sudden it's like we're dragging it back up. It's like your nan's died and we've gone and opened the coffin to have a look inside.
I mean, that's very grim, but yeah, you are correct. I've not spoken about the game really properly at all. I didn't even watch the highlights back until 10 minutes before we sat down to record this, because I didn't care. It was done. The result meant more than any of the performance could have done. We sat here breaking down the performance. It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't. But I also think sometimes you look at those final games, the ones where we've needed something and have or haven't got it, and the performance is actually reflective of the team's endeavour or ethic or approach. Or you can look at it and think, what does it tell me about this team at the end of the story rather than at the beginning of the story? And we've been talking about trying not to break down performances too much over the last few weeks, because you know every single game we've got to go out, we've got to try and win, we know what we need to do. This one we knew what we needed to do, but it was the champions, so we had to factor that in. We had the hardest game, and we weren't the only team in that run, in that little thing, to lose. Had we got Northampton at home like Barnsley had, I think we would have won the game. Had we gone to Reading like Blackpool had, we would have had a similarly tough time, just like we did at Reading a couple of weeks ago. Had we gone to Exeter, you know, again, we probably would have fancied the win. So we did have the toughest game. But second half, I mean, it was a nervy half time around me. You know, everyone was kind of on edge, and I kept checking my phone thinking that perhaps the scores might change at half time. I don't know why I was doing it. It was almost like habit. And then I thought we came out and I'd say it was probably 20 minutes, you might say 25 minutes of the second half. I thought we were the better side by some distance. I felt that Portsmouth, I always feel it crass to say took their foot off the gas, because I don't think that's the case. And the pattern, by the way, of passing was broken down. Do you know, in that period, so from 45 minutes to 75 minutes, we only played 65 passes, 38 successful passes. But theirs was 124 and 95. So their passing ratio had gone down as well. We'll come to why in a second. Shit referee. But we'll come to why in a second. But our XG in that period was 1 and theirs was 0.21. And that XG doesn't include Ben House's effort. Now, you've seen it back, because obviously you would struggle a little bit at the time. At the time, it looked like a golden effort. It hasn't been counted, I think, because it's come off his knee and it looks more like a rebound rather than a chance. But we have that effort. I think Danny Mandroyu scores if he's not fouled, personally. You know, it's a bump from behind. I was very, very surprised not to see a card, because the double jeopardy rule, by the way, is if you deny a goal scoring opportunity with an attempt to tackle and you're the last man, that's not a red card, because the penalty is deemed sufficient and it will be a yellow. But I don't think he was even booked for the challenge.
He wasn't. I'm just looking who, because if you remember back against Blackpool, when Ben House won basically the same penalty, that was a red card.
Yeah. Right. With Sonny Gill and consistency is going to come up in a second. So Danny Mandroyu, a couple of weeks ago, it's the curse of the Stacey West, because a couple of weeks ago I said Danny Mandroyu, he's not missed a penalty all season. He hadn't. We had missed one, by the way. In fact, you know, before this, the previous two penalties we've missed had both been against Shrewsbury. Ted Bishop, when we won 3-0, missed one, and it could have been 4-0. And Max Sanders missed one on the last day of last season. There was a little argument.
With the rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Danny Mandroyu, I'd said, you know, he hasn't missing penalties. You'd always bet on Danny Mandroyu to put the ball in the back of the net. And then it's a Steven Gerrard moment, because cost Liverpool the title with a slip, and has a slip cost us a playoff place?
Yes, it has, because if we'd have scored that, we'd have shut up shop, and I feel like we probably would have kept the clean sheet. And then Lucas Jensen would have had golden glove, and everybody would just be perfectly happy with everything that's gone on. It's really, really unfortunate for him. And I can't imagine what that must feel like in the moment, you know, knowing that. It sounds really harsh because it's not his fault, but just knowing that it cost us a place in the playoffs, heartbreaking. And I was so nervous before this match, and I was so nervous during the match. And then half time came around, and then, you know, the first sort of 5 minutes of the second half, and I'm just feeling a little bit buoyed by, okay, we can do something here. We've got a really good chance. All we're going to need is that one goal. And then we get the penalty, and I don't think I've ever celebrated a penalty being given like that. And then it obviously came back to bite me in the rear end, because I don't know what happened. And the problem was, in the moment, I couldn't tell, obviously, that it was a slip. So I was sort of really, really kind of annoyed, not at Danny, because that's unfair. It wouldn't, even if it would have been saved or he'd have skied it or whatever, it still probably wouldn't have been his fault. Not unless he did try to do one of those cheeky, stupid Penenkas down the middle and it got saved, then it would have been his fault. But no matter what, it's not his fault. But I just felt so angered. And then at that moment, I was a little bit sort of slumped back in my chair. I'm thinking, okay, is this the way today's going? Is this it?
Yeah. I'll be honest, I didn't notice him slip. Because I was kind of half watching and half not. Yeah. I've never doubted Danny Mandroyu when he stepped up to take a penalty until this penalty. Mm-hmm. Which end did Ted Bishop miss at? Shrewsbury game.
You see, I don't even remember there being a penalty in that game.
No, I didn't remember.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm not wrong.
I checked it earlier, but yeah. I know Max Sanders missed at that end of the ground. I'll just maybe we can ask in future if we can have all of the penalties at the other end of the ground instead. Yeah, Ted Bishop's miss was at that end of the ground as well.
Was it?
So there we go. Three penalties at that end of the ground missed. I'm not sure if we have probably had one that end of the ground that's been scored. But yeah, so cursed end of the ground, misses the penalty. It kind of knocked us a little bit, but I think that there were a few more chances. I mean, there was a Mandroyu effort that came in that Joe Taylor headed over. There was a good ball in for Jovan as well, which I think was just taken off his toe. I mean, we had the opportunities.
We did. Jovan's one, that's so unlucky, because that ball, a slight inch higher, that's going over the defender's foot and straight onto Jovan's, and that's a goal. I think there were so many opportunities, especially in that spell. And then when another one kept on getting missed, and then another one, and then another one, that was the thing. You just, unfortunately, you just knew where the day was going.
let me ask you a question, because one of the benefits of doing live on YouTube as well as doing a proper podcast is that there's going to be a degree of interaction, and there's a little bit of debate going in on the YouTube comments, which I'd kind of like to pick up on, because I think it'll be good for those that are listening in at home on the audio on the podcast as well. So the user H said, if the penalty went in, we would have won the game. Simple. Whereas Roy says he disagrees. Roy Dunn, I think Pompey would have changed gear and come at us harder. Now, I thought at the time, penalty goes in, it's game over, because I thought Portsmouth looked like perhaps they were just easing out of the game a little bit. And like I say, it's crass to say took their foot off the gas. And also, I think we went for it after, you know, a little bit later on, which we're coming to, and that would left the gaps for them to score. But actually, they had one shot in the 30 minutes between the beginning of the second half and 75. One effort. So I'm not sure. I think the penalty, and I don't want, Danny Mandroy obviously won't listen to this. Although some players and staff do listen to this, don't they? We know that. So hello, if you're players and staff, thank you for that. But because I don't want to blame, this isn't blame. But for me, if the penalty goes in, we win the game.
I agree. I wouldn't say that it's simple. I know that was sort of a word used in the comment. I wouldn't say it is, but I agree. We will have shut up shop. It will have just been very kind of reminiscent of Oxford. And what we'd be doing is we'd be sat here talking about the referee helping us out by us doing those darker tactics, those sorts of things. Don't forget you're on camera, Gaz.
So I just made a obscene gesture slightly out of view, forgetting that we were going live on YouTube. We'll have to get used to this. Carry on, Charlie. What were you saying?
Yeah, and we'd have done the shithouse tactics. We would have done, because that's the way that we'd have just shut up the game. And we'd have probably ended the game with five defenders on the pitch. Tyler Walker might not have even come on the pitch. You would have probably had Freddie Draper just staying up there with Jovan, just so we've got an out ball, those sorts of things. And I'd have felt really confident that we'd get something from that, especially when you've got the likes of Ethan Aaron, who could just sit right in front of that back line. We'd have seen it out, but that obviously just wasn't the way it went.
We can console ourselves with that, because then we do have a villain, because I've always said that a lot of the time when football fans don't get the outcome that they want a villain. And as all of those watching live on YouTube will have seen, a villain of the piece, not the villain of the piece, was Sonny Gill, the match referee. Now, Sonny Gill's one of the better referees that we've had over the last couple of years. I really like him. I think he's on a fast track to the Premier League. I think he's already been either a Premier League ref or he's run the line. He's been involved in a Premier League game already, I believe. But he lost control of the game for both teams. Now, I wanted to read a little bit about what John Massino said, so I'm going to come on to that in a minute. But we talk about the game management tactics. Now, I was incensed when we left the game. And I was really angry, and I was in Gwynn's telling everybody about how, it was disgusting they came and did this. And actually, it wasn't. It's actually what they owed the rest of the division, to perform at the level that they have performed at, whether they've got something to play for or not. I think they took it to the nth degree, and I think there were some things that really angered me. And there's the keeper, for instance, going down after a half-hearted collision with his own player, but then getting straight up and making the save from Sorensen and then yelling at the ref saying I was down. It's like, well, you weren't injured, were you? Because you've got straight up and you're arguing with the referee. There was the free kick that they got on the edge of the area that they kept moving forward, and then the ref would spray the line and the player rubbed the line out and moved it. Every substitution, they went off from the furthest possible position, and he kept tapping his watch as if to say, I'm watching the time. But like I put in my write-up, it's not 2006. You're not having to tap your watch. You're to tell them to go off at the side of the pitch. Now, I'm not saying that we would have gone on to win the game had he added more than 14 minutes on. I'm not saying anything like that. But it broke up the game. And when you get in a rhythm, when you're like a Lincoln City, we build momentum. And a lot of the games that we've done really well in recently, we've had quick fire goals because we've got on it and there's a confidence and we're flowing, and it's one against Bristol Rovers, two against Bristol Rovers, three against Bristol Rovers, quick, quick, quick. And we had that momentum. We had that momentum with the Jovan chance, the Joe Taylor chance, the missed penalty, the Ben House chance. It was building. And then they sucked all of the life out of the game like a vampire. And the referee didn't handle it.
No, he didn't. And it's difficult because on the one hand, I really want to be sort of angry at him because I want somebody to be angry at. But then at the same time, I'm like, it wouldn't have really made too much of a difference, I don't think. Because we'd have still had to go and throw the kitchen sink at it, even if it was more of a free-flowing game, and they'd have still probably had the opportunities to get in behind us like they did. But it was genuinely despicable refereeing, first of all. No consistency to it. He'd lost control of the game. He wasn't being harsh enough on the players that were quite clearly taking the piss out of him. That's what they were doing. They weren't respecting him as a referee in the middle. And that shouldn't be justified, especially not in the last game of the season like that. What frustrated me and angered me the most, and I know we had this conversation last night, and I know you sort of said there it's fair enough because they'd have done it in game 30. But I can't see why on earth they would choose to do something like that when they're already champions. They're mocking the game. By that point, they're taking the mick out of the game by acting in that way. And then some of the celebrations, tears of Lincoln fans, and then running off and celebrating with a little inflatable trophy. Fair enough, you do that. You're champions. This is your big day out at the end of the season. I'm not saying Lincoln's the big day out for them, but it's the last game of the season, a big away day following. Fair enough, celebrate that. But then don't turn that onto Lincoln fans. There's no real need for that. It just seemed all a little bit theatrical for no real point.
Let me ask you a question then. Are you just as angry when Joe Taylor celebrates in front of the away fans whenever he scores, or do you think, lad?
I think it's different in the sense that if we were champions and we were in the same position as what Portsmouth was, then I would genuinely be sat there saying there's probably no need for that.
But what if he'd done it for the other 40-odd games?
Yeah, I get your point. I do.
I'd love to be critical of Portsmouth. I'd love to be. And I'd love to say Paddy Lane's an arsehole. I've just said it. And you know, I'll now feel about him like I did about Danny Hilton when he celebrated sending Lincoln down with Aldershot. And that's really different, you know, keeping someone down or sending them down. I'd love to say all of that. But how could I say that hand on heart when, although I've said I dislike Joe Taylor doing that in front of the supporters, bear in mind, against Cheltenham, when we, you know, beating them has helped relegate them. Same thing. Same thing. Big, big game. Much on the line for them. And he hasn't gone to... Do you know what I mean? I'm not criticising Joe Taylor for that. Yeah. I don't like to see it, but it's part of the game and a lot of fans do like to see it, just like we did with Matt Reed. They loved it, flexing his muscles in front of them. Yeah. So I kind of get it. Yeah, I don't like that. Cry more and all that, but... You know, he's a 23-year-old lad. He's scored a goal.
Yeah, that's the thing. But potentially fighting for his future at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, he's their leading scorer, so he'll probably still be there next season.
I thought it was Paddy Lane that did that.
Yeah, it was. He's got 12 goals from him, hasn't
he? Yeah, but Colby Bishop's their leading scorer, isn't he?
Oh, did I miss that? Second leading scorer, then.
There you go.
How many? Yeah. I cast a quick look down because I was actually, do you know what? A reason why I've done that, I was actually going to put in my write-up Portsmouth substitute Paddy Lane crying. I'm not sure if it was Lincoln tears or because he didn't start the game. And then I noticed he scored 12 from something like 37 starts. It's like, oh, I can't really use that, can I?
I didn't think he'd started as many games as that, actually.
Was it last? Have I looked at last season?
No, I'm sure you're right. Yeah, he has scored 12 goals from 35 starts.
So I am right.
Yeah.
And scored in 11. God. Yeah, hasn't scored in 11 games. That's his first goal since February the 17th.
He needed to celebrate it then, bless him.
Yeah, he did. He did. So look, we've touched what happened. I don't want to talk too much about their goals because we're at 32 minutes and we're going to take a little break in a minute. But they scored their goals when we were really pushing forward. And I think that's where the game changed, was on that kind of probably a little bit early. It's probably around the 65-minute mark. You know, we started making substitutions. What minutes did we make the subs in? So 56 with Freddie Draper. and Adam Jackson coming off for Duffy and McCarma. 79 minutes. I think when that happened, Mitchell for Walker, that's when it's gung-ho. And we made that substitution on 79 minutes. Walker had a good opportunity on 81 minutes. And I know it was 81 minutes because within 30 seconds, they'd gone up the other end of the pitch and scored. I've been so critical of that professional foul, that pulling a player over. Oh, how I wish Sean Rowan had just been successful with it. Because he literally, there was more of the player's shirt in his hand than there was on the player's back. And he just couldn't do it. And for me, that almost typified, that break almost typified everything about Lincoln's season. That in 1 second, we're in the area, the story's being written. Can Walker turn and put this in the back of the net? Then we try and do, we're just grasping on, desperately trying to stop them. We don't, they score. And that is game over at that point. And I know that we then brought on Moylan for Ben House, but it really is game over when they go 1-0.
Yeah, there was no chance we were scoring two in that last 10 minutes, and we needed to. A draw was never going to be enough, I didn't feel. We needed the two goals, and it just wasn't going to come for us. And to be fair, I'm not surprised then when they scored again, because, at that point, we had to throw everything at them. And they were two game state goals. They wouldn't have scored them if it wasn't for the fact that we were going forward. As you say, that substitute on the 79th minute, it changed everything. And unfortunately, not in our favour. Like you said, just so close. It's those tiny margins. And that's the reason why we're seventh and not sixth.
But a 0-0 draw wouldn't have done us any good anyway.
No,
and it's like I think I've said to you guys privately, I'd rather we went down fighting than... holding on for the 0-0 draw and taking the point. We had to go for it. I'm not convinced a previous head coach would have taken the same approach, personally. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not going to say which previous head coach. I'm not going to say. There's no point in me saying because everyone knows who. So let me wrap up Portsmouth with John Massino's comments about the referee, because I think it's really interesting to get that juxtaposition. Big word for the first live. Really interesting to get that kind of alternative angle. And I'm interested in your comments. So this is what John Massino said about Sonny Gill after the game. "We're not particularly thrilled with our behaviour or the fact we got the yellow cards. It's difficult here at Lincoln." And he's talking about the technical area being so far from the dugouts, because we're encouraged to talk to the fourth officials, but we're told we can't come out of our technical areas. So there were two decisions in the first half very early on, one on Jack Sparks in front of the away fans, and then one where their left-sided centre-back, Rowan, just caught the ball, and then for some bizarre reason it was given a foul against us. Well, it's because he was fouled. Rowan shouldn't have caught the ball, but he was fouled. "I walked to go and talk to the fourth official, and he said, 'That's your last warning. You're going to have to stay in your technical area.' And then I got booked for trying to calm Miles down." That was number 44, who I think generally, I couldn't read the name on the back of his shirt, but I thought it said prickhead. But it's something like something else. But I think my
former for our screen as well, so he might as well.
Oh, God. Which I think is bizarre, because I thought the referee had lost complete control of the game. He's booked me for going onto the pitch. Well, hang on. Massino was just saying that was your last warning for going out of the technical area. What summed it up for me was when their goalkeeper went down in the first half, the referee stopped play and we've got the ball in the back of the net. He stopped play, the goalkeepers went down. Well, he was spark out, by the way, it looked like. At one point, it looked like he was coming off. Then Will Norris has gone down in the second half. He's let play go on. Will Norris got up and made the save. What am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to say to my staff who are incensed because they want to win the game? I'm not going to read anymore. Because I quite liked John Massino up until I've read those. I don't understand what he's talking about.
I just find it all a little bit ridiculous. As I say, it was just all theatrical. I don't know why he's bothering. Like, you've won the game to secure. I mean, you're already champions. You've won this on the last game of the season. You've got your bus parade tomorrow. It was yesterday. Go off and enjoy yourself. Who cares from your point of view about the referee? I can't understand that. And also, Lucas Jensen is not the... If you'd have watched any clips of Lucas Jensen, he is not the sort of keeper to lie on the floor feigning injury when the ball is coming back at him. He's the sort of player that will make sure that he's got a hand up to save it. And most of the time, he will save that second shot if he's actually physically able to. It did genuinely look like he was knocked out. Oh, I haven't seen those comments.
You're not happy now, yeah.
Why have you showed me those comments?
All I'd say is, well, there was two players on the floor after that collision, not just Jensen. There was their player as well. And then secondly, their keeper getting back up, that really hacked me off, if I'm honest. At least let the ball go in the back of the net and then claim you were injured and let the referee make the decision. But getting up to make the save, because then 30 seconds later, he went back down and the ref stopped the game this time. It's like, well, he wasn't injured last time. What happened to the parable of the boy who cried wolf or whatever? Not having any of that. Tell you what we'll do. Shall we all calm down? And we're going to go for a commercial break. If you're watching live on YouTube, there won't be a commercial break here.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And welcome back. So you will have just heard an advert. Apart from those who are watching in, like John Davison, he says, there's me thinking the McDonald's advert was done live. Well, there we go. I did actually go for McDonald's on the way home last night from the presentation in the evening. Do you know why? Right, the food was really good. But there was a couple of problems. One, there was nowhere near enough of it at all.
No.
And that's what you get when you go. I'm not criticizing the club, because that's the sort of portion that you get when you go for a dinner. Because we were in table 26 and there were 26 tables, everyone else was getting their dinner in the period between the awards. But our food arrived as the awards were being given out every single time. And I wanted to watch what was on the video and eat my dinner, and I had my back to the screen.
Yeah.
And it was driving me insane. And there was like a beetroot bruschetta with a goat's cheese, a feta cheese, I think, for starter. I love food, by the way. And it was really good, but the bruschetta was, it was like the sole of a shoe, wasn't it? And I think it should really have been picked up and bitten, but I was trying to be polite. We were in polite company, and obviously Ben was there as well. Then we had a blade of beef with a potato. The beef was nice, but I'm used to a 16-ounce steak.
Yeah.
Well, you are. We've seen what you eat.
You know it.
When it cooked well, though, it was a melt
in
the
really,
mouth.
It was really, really nice.
Beef. And then the chocolate was like a chocolate thing three ways. But it came over the course of 2 hours, would you say?
Yeah.
Probably half seven to half nine-ish.
Mm.
And they weren't massive portions. And during the day, because of my ropey stomach, all I'd had was two Weetabix and a quarter of what I think was a stale pork pie. So, I was hungry.
I'm getting a takeaway tonight, because I have eaten a bacon sandwich this morning, and that is it since the three-course meal last night. I am starving.
Do you know what? If my dad was listening to this now, he'd be going, what the would I want to listen to you knobheads talking about food for? So we'll move quickly on.
This is the good stuff. This is what people want.
Yeah, people want it. John Davison's at fault for talking about the McDonald's advert.
Yeah.
The McDonald's in my head. And you know what, actually, it was because Chris doesn't need any encouragement from McDonald's. I think it was his second of the weekend, and his girlfriend Steph was telling me a couple of weeks ago that he's literally had a McDonald's like once a week for the last 5 or 6 weeks. There's nothing on him. You wait till you get to 45, mate, you'll be a fat sod. Right, so we'll press on. You're going to do a monthly review, which is going to kind of be a yearly review, which I might come on that show. Lots of love, by the way, for the monthly review show. So that's
I saw that. That was really very good. Nice.
Yeah, it was. It's positive. So I don't want to go into it too much, but it's easy for me to say the penalty goes in and we go into the playoffs. But I think as, Dom Clark picked up a little bit earlier, that we finished seventh because of the form before Christmas. McGrandles and Hamilton were big misses in the last few games. You finish where you finish based on what happens over the season. It's easy to say, like Luton and Old Forest are going, one refereeing decision and that's ruined our season. It hasn't. What's ruined your season is the fact you haven't had more games up to that point. Because we could say not having strikers before Christmas ruined our season. Truth is, we've done enough post-season, bar two games, to get into the playoffs. You could say not having McGrandles and Hamilton has really severely impacted our season because it's happened at the tail end of the season, but not having those is over is coming a run of, one defeat in two defeats in 20? Am I wrong?
Yeah, two defeats in 20.
So whilst it's detrimental, you would only then look at and I'm not sure if Hamilton might have been out, but I'm not sure if McGrandles was. You'd look at the Stevenage game, Reading, Wigan and Portsmouth. They'd be the four, wouldn't they?
Yep.
Potentially Charlton, which he couldn't play in anyway, McGrandles. Mm. So you could point to that. So there's all sorts of things I think you could point to. Ultimately, we finished seventh because that's over the course of the season where we could have, where we finish. I'm not sure if the striker situation doesn't happen that things change for the positive in the way that they have. Potentially, would the pressure have built on Mark Kennedy? Potentially, would Mark Kennedy then have been lashing out in his interviews, which led him to be leaving the club? I don't know. I think the biggest thing is the losing McGrandles and Hamilton, and that's purely and simply for the Reading and Wigan game. And that was they were the two games around which there was a couple of pivots, because that was just before Christmas. We drew those two games and then we went on a losing run. We lost and drew those games at the end of the season, and then we picked ourselves up, and it was just a little bridge too far. But for me, it's the losing McGrandles or Hamilton. I know we lost them both. It's losing one of them rather than both of them that's probably just done us.
Yeah, you're probably right, for the sense that, A, we could have then had those in midfield, but then we could have utilised, let's say, Danny Mandroyo a little bit further forward, or Ted Bishop a little bit further forward, and that we can... Thing is, it's really difficult because you can talk about ifs and buts, and one player here could end up changing everything. Not conceding in the last minute against Bolton at Christmas could have changed things. Not conceding in the last minute against Wigan could have changed things, or Bristol Rovers or Northampton. But then there are opportunities where we scored late on, Leighton Orient, for example. There's so many sort of twists and turns as part of this whole season, and especially over the last kind of 6 weeks when it did look like something was going to be happening and we're at least going into this final day with something to play for. And that for me was, as soon as the final whistle went, I felt unbelievably deflated for about 5 minutes. And then it kind of became a point of realisation, and I've probably had that same positivity that a lot of the other people did, of we're here on the final day of the season playing against the champions, and we've just missed out on a playoff spot because we were chasing the game. Because we needed the win. What a moment that is to be a Lincoln fan. We can now look to the future. Simple as that for me. It's just as much pride as it was deflation in those first few minutes.
And you see, you've set it up for me, because I'm now going to go back to a moment that has summed up the last 4 months. And that was when they scored their second goal. And the whole ground was reacting. Their fans were champions and doing all the cry now and all of that. And everywhere, it was just applause. It wasn't singing. It was just applause, because I think at that moment, I'm getting goosebumps, to be fair, talking about it now, because at that moment, it was just togetherness that was off the scale. And it was off the scale. And I remember us losing, the day we won the title, or the day we got given the title against Colchester, and we lost 3-0 and people walked out. There was a degree under Danny, there was an element under Danny that didn't like the football, or they didn't like the fact that we'd gone from nothing to everything and there was loads of new people about and all that sort of stuff. There was so much contrasting. But for me, that moment was the singular, most together moment I think I've ever witnessed at Sinsel Bank, ever. It was just awesome. And the gravity of it didn't hit me, because I was gutted, and it was, it was the final nail in the coffin. And it's only really afterwards where I've kind of gone, wow, yeah, that was something.
I felt proud to be a part of that. I sit front row, lower six, and it was as soon as that second goal went in, straight to the barriers, to the advertising hoardings, to stand and applaud with everybody else. And I'm kind of with you, actually. Like, as proud as I was in the moment, I was also sort of really deflated. But then the gravity of it hit for me. It was last night when we were at the award show, and we were chatting away with people, and we were chatting to Michael Scubala at one point, and he made a comment about that moment, about how special that moment was. He says he's led Leeds United out at Elland Road at Old Trafford, and he has never seen a fan base as united as that moment, as united in defeat as well as that moment. Says it all when you've got your manager almost welling up at those thoughts, and that's what this fan base can do.
Right. Well, I'm going to put that to bed now. We're going to put that to bed. I don't want to talk about Portsmouth anymore. They can go up. All the bitterness at me saying they're going to come straight back down. If I said that to you in the period after the game up until I began slurring and forgetting where I was, my apologies. It was just pure bitterness on my part. They may come back down. They may not. I don't know. Frankly, now they're not in our division, I don't care. There are some things I care about, though, and one of those is the retained list. So what I am going to do is pop, for those who are watching at home, there is the retained list, or there are the players that we believe are out of contract going across the bottom of the screen. Now they are TJ Ioma, they are Ted Bishop, Lewis Monsma, Hakiba Delican, Danny Mandroyu, and Lass Sorensen. Now, two of those, we believe, have got options in their contracts, which are Danny Mandroyu and Lass Sorensen. So let me ask you, Charlie, would you keep either of them, both of them, neither of them, and why?
I would keep both of them, especially, I think, first of all, Lass Sorensen, you have to extend his contract. Worst case scenario, it then means that we can sell him in the summer and actually get a fee, because he's been absolutely outstanding this season. What he's done at this football club is incredible. And I think he's only got, you know, a future. He's got a future in the Championship. I mean, he's played the second most amount of outfield minutes for us. He's got 8 assists. He's got 4 goals. Like, everybody knows the strength of Lass Sorensen. Now then, there's Danny Mandroyu. Danny Mandroyu, for me, is a really interesting one, because I think there is there are two players that, in my opinion, you extend the contract of one, not both. And that's Ted Bishop and Danny Mandroyu. Now, I would trigger the contract extension clause of Danny Mandroyu, and honestly, I would release Ted. And that's a difficult thing to say, considering how strong Ted Bishop has been for us. But Danny Mandroyu, I think, is outstanding. 8th most outfield minutes played. He started in 26. He's appeared in 31. He's had 13 goal contributions, scoring 5 penalties out of 6, scored 3 from open play. I just think he's outstanding. And I made the point after Bolton at home around Christmas, when he got a red card, and it was sort of an in defence of Danny Mandroyu sort of thing, because a lot of people were kind of going for him on social media. And I made the point that he's the sort of player that will stand out in a really strong side, not necessarily in a side that's struggling, because his technical ability, what he can do when he's going to have players around him that can play the same way, is going to be exceptional. And he showed that in so many different parts this season. Barnsley away, for example, some of the passes that he was making to create opportunities for other people, that's what Danny Mandroyu can bring to this football club. With the ball at his feet, I think he could be outstanding next season if we're going for that top 6, maybe even a top 2 spot. So for me, Danny Mandroyu and Lass Sorensen both have a contract extension if it was up to me. It's not. Trust me, you'll be glad that it's not up to me. But yeah, those two.
Given all your new friends, I'm surprised you don't have at least some influence. Okay, let me put it this way to you. First of all, just for absolute clarity, I would renew both contracts in a heartbeat, irrespective of whether we intend to keep either player for next season, because they both have resale value and their assets. Lass plays massively, massively underrated. What award did he win? He didn't win players.
Nope, he won something or other.
He won an award.
I've got it up. Lass Sorensen, partner player of the season.
Okay, there was an awful lot of player of the seasons.
There was.
So that's where all of the sponsors get to give vote there for their player of the year. So Lass has won that. He was very close in a lot of other player of the years. And when we do our yearly review show, we'll reveal our player of the year, etc. So, you keep Lass. And I think he's massively underrated. I've said it before. He's the sort of player that he's always kind of a 7 out of 10, aside from obviously Charlton at home. And there's always somebody that stands out on a match day better than Lass. But then there's always somebody who's played worse than Lass as well. I love that consistency about him. And he can get forward. He can defend. He's improved no end over the course of the last 18 months or so when he obviously arrived as a central midfielder. I keep Danny Mandroyu. Resale value, I would argue 3 goals from open play is not enough from a player like him who gets forward, but let's not forget he scored 3 since we beat Barnsley, 5-1, and I think maybe 2 have been penalties. Oxford certainly was. Wigan was open play.
Yes.
And then there was the Barnsley game. So I think that he has been reinvented a little under Michael Scabala. And I think that's taken time given his 2 red cards. But I'd offer him a contract because he has resale value. I'll touch on Ted. Offering Ted a contract depends on 2 things. 1, does he take a pay cut? And with no Premier League deal in sight, it doesn't look like the wage structure that we were expecting to be implemented over the summer is going to happen. So there may be a line of clubs looking at Ted going, we want him in our team, and rightly so. So I get that. So if he's, you know, if he's going to be one of the biggest earners, you don't put him there right there at the top anymore, purely and simply based on the way that we're trying to shape our squad. The second thing is, do we have an improved budget next season? Now, all the noises are no. We've got a new, significant new investor, 12.6% of Lincoln City Holdings. The estimated figure that's gone into that is 2 million, I believe, the estimated figure. Obviously, we have a shortfall every year, but there have been little conversations where you wonder if we might just be having a bit more of a go. If the budget is there, Ted Bishop is the perfect number 12 because he can play on the wing. He can play attacking midfield. He can play holding midfield. He's kind of like a sexy Tom Pett, not in a sexual way, but do you know what I mean? He's and you know, he's no fool. I mean, he's a player who can produce a good free kick. So that's my take on Ted.
Ted's a brilliant player. I just think, and this is going to sound really harsh as a sentence, I think he's probably the most replaceable out of those few players. I really do think that, because if we're talking about having him as one of the higher earners in the squad, I wouldn't be too surprised if we could maybe bring somebody in who's, let's say, a little bit younger, that, who knows, maybe it's a loan or more of a project player that could then be that squad player, rather than having one of the top earners who, you know, if he is going to be on maybe a slightly higher wage, even if in an increased budget, if he's going to be on a starting player's wage, I'd prefer to maybe be bringing somebody in a little bit younger that we can have as a project and have them as the 12th man rather than Ted. Yeah, you're totally muted.
I'm not talking about projects here. I'm having to talk about going, you know, going for promotion. And if you go for promotion, the division is very much more than, you know, the game is very much more than an 11-man squad. And with our injuries that we've had, having that versatility is good. And I think actually, I'm not saying that we should, but actually the most replaceable of all of those players is probably Lass, because a right wing back is a right wing back, whereas Ted is more effective in a variety of positions. It's harder to replace Mr. Flexible. Lass is more of a starter for us than Ted. But I just think what Ted brings is, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that we disagree on this. We're both going to agree on Hakiba Delican, aren't we?
No. Do you know what? All of the goals he's scoring over in Doncaster now. Yes, of course we are. He's doing fantastically over at Doncaster. Really happy for him. But it was always billed as an exit loan. This is a loan for him to put himself in the shop window. Really glad that he's actually done that. And hopefully he's got a good opportunity next year. Could even be in League One with Doncaster if they wanted to try and sign him up and they win those playoffs.
I'm just looking at the time now, so we must crack on a little bit. Lewis Bonsman?
No. head versus heart, you want to keep him. He's a brilliant player, always been outstanding for us, proper fans player, but no.
Wouldn't surprise me to see him go back to the Netherlands. I like Lewis. He's been a lovely lad. I just think, you know, three ACLs, two while he's been with us, it's too much of a risk. When we've been talking about replaceable players, you know, Lewis Monsmo, when he first came here, was an outstanding prospect and not entirely replaceable. But I think now he's a centre back who, you know, we've got a settled back three, back four, whatever. Yeah. And finally, Mr. Ayoma.
I think we're going to let him go, but it's one of those he'll be leaving as a fantastic servant to the club. He'll have made 113 league appearances, I've got it down as. And this season as well, when I was just researching for this, this stat, I don't want to say surprised me, but it was a pleasant surprise. This season, although he might not have necessarily appeared in as many matches as he would have hoped, he was obviously always really strong for us. He had 1.96 points per match when he was in the squad for more than 30 minutes of a game. That promotion form. Not saying, you know, it's probably a coincidence in some of those matches, that sort of thing, but that's just one of those little interesting stats that think, what if he started every game? Maybe we'd be getting 90 points a season.
Depending on how it fits in a wage structure, I'd absolutely give TJ another contract. I would. I like TJ,
I just don't think we will.
My question was, would you? I'm not saying whether you think we will or not. Show TJ some love. Come on.
He would also have to take a pay cut.
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially. But if clubs are going to be spending big money on players, where are they going to be doing it? Are they going to do it for Ted Bishop with four goals and four assists, you know, in the league or whatever this season, or a TJ who has been in and out of our side? TJ doesn't get a deal with a top-end League One club. Ted Bishop potentially could get a deal with an Oxford or Wickham or Bristol Rovers or something like that. For me, TJ, it's harder because he's a right-sided centre-back or he's a right-back. And it's not, you know, I just said about Ted Bishop being a sexy Tom Pett. Well, you know, TJ's position isn't the sexiest on the field. If it was, Sean Rowan would have moved up to the Championship in a heartbeat last season because, you know, he's got youth and all that sort of stuff, and it didn't happen. So, okay, so that's that. Oh, sorry, would you like to have a say?
No. I was just breathing.
Do you know, you have an awkward habit of doing that. Right. Now, there was one other...
spending all of last night yawning.
Yeah, well, I couldn't help that, could I? I wanted to pick up on one other player, and I wanted to do it in a little bit more depth than the time stamp will currently allow. But bear in mind, it's an hour, but bear in mind, we have got to cut a little bit out. So, Ali Smith. Now, of the lone players, you kind of think, well, Jay Benn's gone off to the National League. Likelihood is if he gets a loan next season, he goes into League Two. You think Sam Long, or maybe even with Solly Hall if they come up. You think Sam Long, you know, I don't think he's going to come back and be our number one. Is there a league loan potentially for him? Alicia has been at Peterborough Sports. He's going to have to prove himself a little bit further up. Kamson Kamara, the boy who's been on loan much further now, he comes back. The only player that we have out on loan, in my mind, I forgot Jaden Brown, but I think that he probably comes back with a view to going away. So the only one that we have really who has gone out, done a job in League Two is Ali Smith. Now, Ali Smith was a key part of our first team setup. Surprisingly loaned out, dare I say. I think that's fair, isn't it? Given that he had been a key player. You know, I mean, there was one point where he was the only player who was ever present in all of the competitions. So he's put on his Twitter today, thank you, Colchester official, for his loan spell. Some of the replies, I just want to read some of the replies. Will, please stay, mate. We'll be in the Prem in 5 years. Promise. T, anyone. Thanks, Alistair. You brought a lot of composure and quality to the team. You're a key part to survival, and I hope all the best in your future. Barry, was hoping we could sign you on a permanent basis. You took control of the midfield and we've lacked that for a long time. Good luck. I mean, there's so many more. Dave B, thank you for your massive contribution to keeping the club up, Ali. Hopefully we meet again soon. Jeanette, thank you, Ali. You've been brilliant whilst you've been here. Hopefully you'll be offered a contract by Cole and accept it. If not, wishing you all the best for the future. They go on and on and on. And I mean, there's actually now, when I first looked, there was 7 or 8 replies. There's now 31 replies on that. For me, that suggests he's done well. Now, bear in mind, Fred Draper went, smashed it at Walsall. He's come back, has become a key part of the first team squad. Joe Taylor smashed it in League Two, came on loan to us, massive part of the squad. Hacks struggled in League Two last season, has come back to us, still done really well, and has now made himself a success in League Two. When you've got that level of success at that kind of level, too many levels there, he's surely got a role to play, has he, next season?
I hope so, for sort of his sake and for ours. And, you know, in hindsight, how pivotal could he maybe have been in the second half of the season as a central midfielder that could maybe play that slightly deeper role? But to kind of play a little bit of devil's advocate, Sutton United fans were saying the exact same sort of thing as what Colchester fans are now when he left there to obviously come and join us last summer. And I was really, really excited about the prospect of having Ali Smith in the squad. And, you know, he was a good servant for that first half of the season, but he wasn't exactly outstanding and struggled in certain matches, you know, certain games more than others, obviously. And I don't really think he ever massively impressed in too many matches. So as much as I hope that there is a place for him next season, and I think he'll hopefully get like pre-season in August with us at the very least, I just wonder whether are we kind of seeing the repeat of what it was last summer, where this hope's kind of building on him and he just can't quite deliver it in a Lincoln City shirt.
The one thing I would say is if there isn't a future here, there is cash to be had from Ali Smith because he's on a 2-year Absolutely. Deal or whatever. And he's impressed at Colchester. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting. Again, I think if we're looking at a squad as a whole, as a squad player, he feels like he'd be a really good part of it, perhaps more so than one or two of the other boys who are out on loan. You know, like you've got Jaden Brown there who plays left wing back or left back, and you've got Sean Rowan and Dylan Duffy now and Rico Hackett who can play there. So Jack Burrows has been on loan. Likelihood is we'll be able to dip into the loan market. But I just wonder if a player like Ali Smith has that little bit of versatility. My only concern is the readiness with which we did loan him out. Now, whether that was to balance books in order to bring Conor McGrandles in, I don't know. If you're asking me, would I rather have Conor McGrandles or Ali Smith? It's Conor McGrandles all day long. You know, and Conor's got another year at Charlton, but if he's not wanting to be there, he may or may not be. But if he wants to be back in Lincoln and, you know, we want him back and there's a bit of money in there, then that's what you do. And Neil Flowers literally just asked the same. Ali went out so Conor could come in. Which would you rather have? It's no disrespect to Ali Smith. Conor McGrandles has been there and done it in League One. And he, by the way, was outstanding in the games he came back in. And I think there was a bit of a feeling when he came in from some fans that it's like, oh, we're going back over old ground. What are we bringing him in for? He was crap at Cambridge. He's been crap at Charlton. He wasn't crap at Cambridge or Charlton. They loved him. And I really like him. And he's, yeah, I'd have Conor McGrandles back at Lincoln City all day long and twice on a Sunday.
I would as well. And I would do it over Ali Smith. And again, it's the same as you. It's not an insult to Ali Smith. It's more of a compliment to Conor McGrandles than anything else. He came in, he made you forget that Ethan Hamilton wasn't in the squad. And that is the biggest compliment I could have given him at the time.
Yeah. And do you know what? Actually, watching Ethan's goal of the season contender, it just made me realise how much we have actually missed Ethan Hamilton as well, that drive from midfield. But it also made me realise, well, I say how much we've missed, what he could bring that evidently we didn't miss because of results. You say how much have we missed? We've just plugged in, we've gone through a run that's taken us from 10, you know, 15, 20 points away to twice being in the playoffs. You know, that's a really big thing to remember is we were talking about, can we get in the playoffs before the end of the season? We did twice. It was maintaining it. And it's probably that we needed. So we certainly missed it. It's interesting. Look, it's going to be a big summer, I think. But then that's the same every summer, isn't it? Every summer is a big summer. Every summer is the start of a new chapter. Every summer there's players that are going to go out and there's players that are going to come in. Every summer you're preparing for things. Let me be honest, I'd rather we went out on the final day of the season and not go through to the playoffs than go into the playoffs and get beat in them.
because we can plan earlier. You know, at the moment, Oxford can't plan who they're going to buy, who they're going to bring in, because they've now got two games to face. And if they go through to the final, they're 3 weeks behind everyone else. And we saw what being set back can do to you in 2021. So I'd rather we ended as it did on that positive note, with that crowd applauding the team. And you could feel it. You were there last night, Charlie. You can feel it off the squad. You know, there is a togetherness. And it's easy to say. And we saw it under Danny Cowley. But there is a togetherness in a squad that people were saying, by the way, back in October, was a squad full of troublemakers who weren't playing for the manager and all this sort of stuff. We end the season with two of them, one a lone player who won't be with us next season, stood on stage conducting the Skubala song to the rest of the players who were going to sing it. So I like it. The biggest asset that we've got is Michael Skubala. Personable. There was times last night where I looked at him and he was just walking around, bottle of beer. You didn't know he was the manager. And I think I said something to Alan Long a couple of months back that we've had a manager who, Danny Cowley, was brilliant. You walked into a room, you knew he was a football manager. You knew he managed Lincoln, because if you didn't know, he would tell you relatively quickly. Not in an arrogant way, but you know, he was a football manager and you knew it. Michael Skubala, you could have walked into that room and picked out 15 or 20 people and said, maybe he's the manager, before you pick out Skubala. So he's very unassuming, but he's one of the biggest assets that this football club has. We talk about players all the time, I think. So,
yes. No, I just want to agree. But then I just also want to pick up on one other person who I think is a massive asset to this football club. And it was summed perfectly last night when he was handed the Special Achievement Award. I can't remember the specific name of the award that they gave him, but that's obviously Clive Nates. And then that extends to Harvey and the rest of the board, and Liam and Jez and all of the custodians of this football club. They're the reason that we're here right now being so positive about this football club. It's because of them. It's the direction that they're all taking us in. And it's the journey that we've been on ever since Clive turned up. And it's the journey we're continuing to go on. It's, look, when the investment news came out last week, your immediate thought as a most football fans is to immediately be sceptical at new people coming into a football club. Okay, let's do some heavy research on them. Are they the right people? Are we sure we want to be giving up 12.6% or whatever? I never felt that once when I saw the news, because you have full faith in Clive and Harvey and Liam to be bringing the right people in, the like-minded people. So then if one person ever drops out, you've still got the same like-minded people in and around the club. So, just huge praise to everybody in and around Lincoln City at the minute.
And doesn't it make it so much easier doing these podcasts when we don't have to be negative? <It does. laughs> Well, ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, whatever you identify as, that is effectively a wrap on the 2023-24 season in terms of match analysis, but it is certainly not the end of our coverage for this campaign. There will be a yearly show coming up. Charlie will be putting all of that into plan over the next 24-48 hours and putting a recording time together. We'll be doing some content over the summer as well. It may be that we go a week or so without a podcast after the yearly show, just to take a little bit of a break. We might still do some stuff. Surely when the retain list comes out, we'll come on and we'll do that. So who knows? We might get some people on. We might talk about the season a little bit more. I shall be recording a former players podcast on Wednesday night, so that'll be a good opportunity to look back. If you haven't already, go back and have a listen to Colin Alside. It was absolutely brilliant. 41 of you, give or take, have been watching this live, which hopefully means that the experiment is worth it. So thank you for that. And we'll continue to do that through the course of the off season, pre-season, whatever you want to call it, post-season. We came so close, but it just wasn't quite to be. It's really the story of the season. And I think that is where we leave it today. Up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
It's the 90th minute and all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.